Blog Talk Radio.
Hey y'all, it's Lori Jean, and we're on Dangerous Freedom on Freedomizer Radio. Hey, I hope you guys have had a great week. It has been another long week for me. I'm sure you feel the same way in certain ways. You know, a lot to be thinking about and concerned about with our government and our country right now. And for those of you who are new, I just wanted to welcome you and to tell you that the reason that we call this Dangerous Freedom is from the quote from Thomas Jefferson, you know, one of our founding fathers. And he says, "I prefer dangerous freedom over peaceful slavery." And then I wrote this nice little quote here that says, "Freedom has never been free. It has always been dangerous. Land of the free because of the brave, right? Well, welcome to the new military. We are called to protect this great nation against all enemies, foreign or domestic. And if we, the people, do not fight for our freedom now, we will be the last generation to know America as a free country. We need to take our country back and defend our constitutional liberties in order to leave a legacy of freedom to our future generations." And then we discuss the hottest topics related to freedom, how to fight back against the tyrannical government, because when tyranny becomes law, rebellion becomes duty. And we are the resistance. So with that being said, welcome. Tonight we're going to be discussing the NIH. That stands for the National Institutes of Health, information that was provided. This week, the topic is going to be ivermectin, because a lot of people are curious, you know, how can we help prevent COVID? How can we, handle it if we're just early on? We want to stay out of these hospitals. We don't want the hospitals overwhelmed, but we're feeling sick. Like, what can we do? And you know, even if we have loved ones in the hospital, many know that I advocate. I've now been termed the nurse advocate, which is super cute. So I am the nurse advocate who's been helping lots and lots of families with their loved ones in the hospital, just advocate for their care. And even in nursing homes, even in certain situations in home care, just all kinds of things. And my friend Nicole Sirotek and I have been helping people, just advocating for their care. She's just new to joining me on the advocacy side, but she's been a nurse for a very long time. I'm newer in the nursing field, just graduated school and got licensed. However, we are working together, so she has more nursing experience, and then I have much more advocacy experience, so it's kind of a cool team, and we've been working together now for a little bit, and we've been helping these families and people who are really struggling with getting the care that they need and just making sure that their loved ones are well taken care of. In the future, we have a desire to create like a certificate that the hospitals will be certified as, you know, advocate certified. I don't know. We're going to call it something cool. But it's just, you know, in the future one day, that would be really neat to be able to have that. So without further ado, the NIH approves ivermectin as a COVID-19 treatment. Now, some people didn't like the term when I said that, because they said that they neither approve or deny, which is true. However, what they have said is that they are... Let me see. I don't want to misquote it. So I'm going to grab the quote real quick. Hang on just 1 minute, because I put it on my page. Okay. Give me 1 sec, y'all. I have a lot of stuff on my page. Okay, there's like hundreds of comments because this was shared a couple hundred times. So give me just a second. Okay. The NIH has upgraded their recommendation and considers ivermectin as an option for use in COVID-19. Here is the quote. 1 week after Dr. Paul Merrick and Dr. Pierre Corey, founding members of the Frontline COVID-19 Critical Care Alliance, along with Dr. Andrew Hill, researcher and consultant for the WHO, presented the data before the NIH, which is National Institutes of Health, Treatment Guidelines Panel. And the NIH chose to upgrade their recommendation and now considers ivermectin an option for use in COVID-19, which is huge, you guys, because what this does is open up the doors for doctors and hospitals to be having access to this medication more than they have in the past, because in the past we've had a little bit of trouble receiving this medication. And some people are saying, well, they didn't approve it, but they didn't deny it. And that's actually true, but It is now on the same level as something like remdesivir and convalescent plasma, which they've been using constantly in the hospitals. So we should have no trouble getting this medication. And what's really cool is if you guys are familiar with this website, I've been saying it. I'm not sure, you know, who's new and who's not. So I'm just kind of go over some other information. But I have been touting this website. It's called COVID-19criticalcare.com. COVID-19criticalcare.com. That is where you can find, you know, videos from Dr. Corey, where he went before the Senate testifying that he's just so tired of all of these people dying when they don't have to. He testified that ivermectin is literally safe and effective as a treatment for COVID. And he said that these people don't need to be needlessly dying. And he made a comment that he just can't do this anymore. Like, this is just, it's beyond frustrating for him not being able to give some of these patients this medication that has been shown to be effective. As of yesterday, I believe it was, my good friend, Dr. James Weiler, he has a show called Unbreaking Science, and he had Dr. Pierre Corey on his show to reveal the most latest science on ivermectin. And so all of the science that we had seen up until that point was, I believe, 11 or 12 clinical trials. And at this point, he said that they have over 25 clinical trials with, you know, thousands of participants, and different, you know, studies have different amounts of people. So they're not thousands in each study necessarily, but they are all over 50. So they're not tiny studies. And just think, I mean, we did some of these vaccines approvals based on 45 people. So everything is over 50 people. Some of them have hundreds. And so it's good information. And he was saying, and this is his words, not mine, and I, you know, literally am not here to diagnose, treat, or cure any diseases, of course, but I'm just going to say what he has said in his research. He has found that ivermectin has been shown to be effective in every stage of COVID. And COVID, as we know, is something that people want to prevent. So it is effective to take ivermectin, he's saying, as a prophylaxis, which means before you get sick. And it is also effective to take it in stage one, and it's effective to take it in stage two. And so for those of us who are medical professionals like me, we all know that COVID gets to that real stage two when they're in ICU, right? And there is protocols for certain oxygenation levels. And so, like, you know, greater than 4 liters and they do this, and then, you know, less than 4 liters and they do this. So the difference between the iMask protocol and the Mask Plus protocol would be the iMask is really for prophylaxis and or early outpatient treatment to keep yourself out of the hospital. So prophylaxis, of course, meaning before you get sick and come down with anything. So it's really just a preventative. And then early outpatient treatment is you are getting sick and you're starting to fight it right away. And they say that one or two doses of COVID and it can rid the COVID. And what I have seen personally in some of the patients that we have tried ivermectin in, as far as advocacy goes, so not my personal patients in the hospital, but as far as fighting for them and their care, being their advocate with United States for Medical Freedom, I have seen that somebody tested COVID positive. And then at the same time, within, you know, the second or third dose of ivermectin being given, they were now COVID negative. So it really did effectively get rid of COVID. Some of the problems, though, is these hospitals are not using it, and we're begging for it sometimes, and they refuse, and that's not okay. And then some of the times we're asking for it, and they won't try it unless they're literally on death's door, which has actually helped in a sense because they actually were willing to try it, and then it did work. But the problem is sometimes these patients have been ventilated for so long that their lungs are so weak or stiff. Excuse me. And so if they had waited a really long time. If we could take that and use it early treatment, early on, and help these people sooner before the ventilator, before they even need a BiPAP, before they need all of those things, that would be the best way to go, right? And so early treatment is so, so, so important in COVID, and especially before multiple organ failure, because we know with COVID what happens is, you know, you're having a lung issue, but then on top of that, if you have any comorbidities, especially diabetes, especially kidney issues, and especially heart failure, all of those are, you know, are a disaster waiting to happen. So if you have kidney issues, you know, that's what the body uses to help when you have a respiratory issue is the kidneys. And so if your kidneys aren't good and your lungs aren't good, then my goodness, you're in trouble. I'm not saying it's definitely a death sentence by any means, but I'm just saying you would have a much, much harder time. And especially with all the liquids and everything that needs to be given, the fluids and all these things, it's easy to become overloaded, and then your heart starts to have trouble too. So it's a balance. It's a very delicate balance in critical care these days. But what I will say is if we can keep you out of the ICU, let's keep you out of the ICU, right? And your families and everything. So I highly recommend that you go to COVID-19criticalcare.com. Check out Dr. Pierre Corey and Dr. Paul Malik. I believe is his last name. Hang on. I think it's Merrick. Sorry. One second. Merrick. Dr. Paul Merrick and Dr. Pierre Corey. And that's the Frontline COVID-19 Critical Care Alliance. So COVID-19criticalcare.com. Check out the iMask protocol if you're not sick and you want to keep it that way. The iMask protocol also if you start to get sick. If you have a loved one in the hospital and they're needing help, you can, excuse me, I'm sorry, I have a really dry throat tonight. I'm not sick, y'all. Hang on just 1 second. Sorry, okay, I'm taking a drink. If you guys have loved ones in the hospital or anything like that and you need help with advocating, of course, talk with me. Join United States for Medical Freedom. We had to switch our group online because Facebook is so tyrannical right now. They shut down United States for Medical Freedom. And so we had like a 40,000 member group, and now we're down to, you know, I think 7,000. We're rebuilding it. And we had to change the name a little bit because if I put the word freedom, it sounds so ridiculous, you guys, but it's the God's honest truth. If I put the word freedom on it, it immediately shut it down. So I had to put United States, the number 4MF. United States, the number 4MF. And that's on Facebook. If you're on MeWe, we have a United States for Medical Freedom group. If you're in Texas, we have a Texas for Medical Freedom group on MeWe. If you're on Parler, we have at US, the number 4MF. And that's also our Twitter, at US4MF. And, you know, we're having a gab. It's literally crazy trying to run all these platforms, you guys. So be patient with us as we're trying to kind of slowly transition and switch. I honestly don't want to give up all of the people that we are reaching. We're still reaching thousands and thousands of people. Even how crazy tyrannical and shadow banned we are with Facebook, I'm literally banned from posting in my own groups and on comments for about the next, till the 23rd, so 18, 19, 20, 200, so 6 more days. And y'all, it's insane. So I get it. I hate the censorship. I hate a lot of things. I hate China, like, you know, controlling us and all of our things. I don't like any of that. What I do like, though, is the amount of people that we're reaching, because, listen, this is not about just the freedom fighters. This is about the people who need the information desperately, that are so fearful, that have been lied to by this media and everything. You know, of course, we're not saying that people aren't sick. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that people aren't sick. But what I am saying is I have done the math, and I have done, you know, I've seen the mortality rate. And from what I've done, I've literally seen a mortality rate of 0.1. And that's 0.1 of 1%. So that's 0.1%. So we're talking like 99.9% of people are going to be okay, or at least over 99% of people. We can all agree to pretty much that. And when those are the numbers and their statistics, and that's using a lot of the deaths that they have said have happened by COVID, and honest to God, they've termed stroke patients COVID sometimes, or car crashes, and they said that they died from COVID. You're like, but they died in a car accident. You know, that is the truth. They have labeled some of those people as COVID deaths. I'm assuming it's because of money. I don't know why else they would do that. But unfortunately, we're in a place where these hospitals are getting money for COVID patients. And I'm not even saying that they're always doing the wrong thing, but it certainly seems like they have a financial benefit to term people COVID patients. And I just have a problem with them making extra money off of these people. And it's like, they make like $40,000 if somebody gets on a ventilator. And so I've had a hospital be angry with a family before because the 83-year-old man refused the ventilator. And it's like, why are you mad at them? They have that right. Like, he has that choice, and he was in his right mind. And he said, listen, I've seen the studies. I'm not going to make it off that ventilator. And he's like, I don't want the ventilator. And he deserves the right to choose. And we just fought for him all the way to say, hey, he deserves that right to choose. And thankfully, you know, he got his wishes because that was what he wanted. And of course, we gave him all the information and we said, sir, you know, if you're not intubated and you needed that, you know, that's something you could potentially die. And you'll be at much greater risk or whatever, you know, explaining him the risks and the benefits and allowing choice is what autonomy is all about. And truly that is what medical freedom is all about, is the right to choose, the right to informed consent. And I just hope that you guys will all fight for that, because we need to keep choice in medicine. And right now, more than ever, you know, with this vaccine and everyone trying to mandate it and everything, some of these therapeutics are very beneficial. So it's like, maybe, I mean, I don't know if they're just wanting to silence the therapeutics because they're scared that no one will want the vaccine, or if they, I don't know what the deal is. Maybe they won't get the emergency authorized use anymore if there is therapeutics that are working. But it was so funny because Dr. Fauci ended up saying, I think it was today or yesterday, that we really need to start, you know, looking into early treatments with COVID. And it's like, we have literally been saying this for months and months, right? Like, there's people who've been fighting for early patient treatments. I mean, hydroxychloroquine even, and it got shut down. And then now ivermectin is kind of getting shut down. And I don't know, like, I just think it's crazy because, you know, they seem to be all for trying different new medications that cost a lot of money, that have no long-term safety data, you know, like remdesivir or Regeneron and, you know, convalescent plasma and all these different things. And yet when we want to try something that's like maybe a little off-label or a new purpose for a drug that has literally been on the market for 30 years and actually has more long-term safety data than any of those things, it's all of a sudden like, oh, no, we can't do that, which is, I mean, to me and probably every other medical professional, absolutely ridiculous, because honest to God, like, these people prescribe off-label all the time. I mean, if you work in the hospital, well, maybe you do live in the hospital if you're a doctor and a nurse, but if you're working in the hospital, you know, just like I do, that we use off-label all the time. It's like, it's not even, you know, so it's really shocking to receive so much opposition. And if you look up ivermectin safety profile, it literally comes with very little side effects. And especially if you're on a ventilator, like, all of those side effects wouldn't even be an issue, because the side effect could be a reaction, right? And let's say the worst reaction you can think of, which is like anaphylaxis. If you're on a ventilator, you're not worried about anaphylaxis because you're ventilated. You know what I'm saying? So it's really, even that is like, kind of nil as a potential. And that's always a potential, right? Like, if you had remdesivir or if you had convalescent plasma, those would have the same questions. Like, could you be allergic to that? And so it's not like this is brand new. This is any medication that you try that you've never tried. This would be Tylenol if you've never had it before in your life. You don't know if you're allergic, right? Like, you don't know if you're allergic to a food unless you try it. And so, like, I just think, it's worth a try. And I like the things that I've seen as far as the science goes. And he did present quite a bit of new science. And so I wanted to go over just a little bit of what he presented. Like I said, he presented that on my friend, Dr. James Weiler's show called Unbreaking Science. And it's on my Facebook page if you guys wanted to check that out. It's not too far down. Give me just one second. Not too far down. And I have the PDF and everything. And that's what I'm going to be looking at with y'all right now. So if you guys you know, are able to jump into that and you wanted to look through it with me. If not, that's totally fine. But I was just going to kind of go based on his PDF and some of the information, because he goes into some details that we're not going to cover of tree of ivermectin. Just to give you a quick overview from what I have seen, the guy who invented it was Japanese. He got like a Nobel Peace Prize in 2015 because ivermectin is so safe and so amazing, and it's done so much good. It's like an anti-parasite. It is an antiviral. It is an anti-inflammatory. And so, hang on just one second. And so it's really helpful in COVID, I think, because of the anti-inflammatory and the antiviral pieces. And he goes into some things in here. Hang on right quick. Let me get to some charts. But, you know, they have 25 studies, he says, of ivermectin now that's been used all throughout the world. And he said, you guys, in his video on Unbreaking Science, if you wanted to see it, like I said, it's on my page. I'm Lori Jean on Facebook. You can find me. I've got curly hair. It actually still says Merry Christmas on my frame because I haven't even messed with it yet. But if you go to his video, he says he's beyond frustrated because some of the things they were acting like was that because some of these are from, you know, countries that are, it was like Brazil and where else was it? Oh, man. Hang on. I'm looking at the Brazil table right now. Some of, I think it was Colombia and Brazil and a couple of other places. And they were basically acting as if that can't apply to Americans. It was like, what? You know, almost like a reverse racism where it was like, oh, that wouldn't be the same for white people. I mean, it was just insanity. And he said he was furious because honestly, he's like, what are you saying? Like, so it works for black and brown people, but it doesn't work for white. Like, he was furious, and you can like listen to how he said that. That was my takeaway, was that he was actually frustrated because they were acting like the clinical trials that were working for them certainly wouldn't work in America. And he's like, but they're statistically significant, and they're, you know, a lot of them are working really well. And he gave this presentation for clinical, you know, physicians, so that they would be able to see all of the data so that they could make determinations if they wanted to have it in the hospitals or not. And so I really hope that they take a look at these things because, oh, it was India. It was India and Nigeria and Bangladesh, Spain, Dominican Republic, Argentina. So some in Mexico, they have Egypt, all kinds of places, y'all, like across the country that have been using this. And I've heard that they've been giving out in India. He said, I think, of a population of, hang on, if it was 200 million, I think it was a huge amount population. And he said that they were giving it out as a prophylaxis, you know, to prevent illness. And he said that there's, like, hardly anybody sick there. So he said they're giving it out in packages, basically, and passing it out to the people. Bangladesh, Pakistan, Brazil, Peru, Florida has had some, Iraq, India, Bangladesh. So they've had quite a bit of information as far as ivermectin in COVID. And let's see. Okay, give me one second. So we go through all these charts. It's a little bit heady because it's made for physicians. Sorry, y'all. So give me a second. I'm trying to find some of this summary so it can just kind of like summarize it for y'all. Okay. The clinical evidence base for ivermectin against COVID-19. A summary of the statistically significant results from the above controlled trials are as follows. Okay, so I'm going to give you the summary, not all of the information from each one. But all 8 available controlled trial results show statistically significant reductions in transmission. Y'all, this is huge, and I'm going to tell you why. Because even the vaccine, I was on the FDA and the ACIP meetings, okay, for both Pfizer and Moderna, and they both asked if this vaccine can prevent transmission. And the answer given back to the doctors who asked those questions was no. We don't know. They don't have any data on that. So the answer is they don't even know if the vaccine can prevent transmission. But ivermectin has shown in all 8 controlled trials that it does reduce transmission. This is huge because everybody is taking this vaccine thinking potentially that it reduces transmission of the virus. But we don't have any data to say that it does. But we actually do have data that says that ivermectin reduces transmission. So I'm not saying whether to get the vaccine or not. I'm personally not getting it. I don't think that 2 months worth of data on a vaccine is enough information. And I know that most pro-vaxxers that I've heard of agree. However, I also know a ton of medical professionals who believe in it, think that it's great, seen tons of reactions. I'm nervous. And I don't believe that we need that for a virus that's 99.9% people are going to be okay. Because remember, the mortality rate was 0.1%. So, however, if you want to get it and you're fully informed, by all means, like I believe that you should have the choice to do that. But all 8 available controlled trials showed statistically significant reductions in transmission of this virus. That is huge. All right, hang on just 1 second, y'all. Okay, sorry about that. I have a really dry throat. Okay, guess I haven't talked this much all day. Okay, there was 3 random controlled trials. So the other ones were, Okay, so 3 random controlled trials with large statistically significant reductions in transmission rates. So out of 774 patients. So that's quite a bit, you know. And then 5 OCT. What is that? OCT, I think it is. What does the O mean? I forgot. Hang on, guys. I'm human. I'm so sorry. I just went through this with him yesterday, and I was like, oh, yeah. Hold on. OCT, I think it means occupational or something like that. Probably not. Hang on. I don't want to make it. I'm going to try to find it. Let's see if I do. Command F. Oh, here we go. Observational controlled trials. Okay, sorry, y'all. All right, so, now I lost my page, but observational. Okay, let's go back to the summary. Sorry. Okay, I'm jumping around here because I got to go back to the summary of everything. Okay, so all 8 available controlled trials result significant reductions in transmission. So 3 random controlled trials is different than 5 observational controlled trials. Everybody understand? So there was 3 random controlled trials with large statistically significant reductions in transmission, and N was 774, okay, between those 3 randomly controlled trials. Then there was 5 observational controlled trials with large statistically significant reductions also in transmission. And that N number of patients would have been 2,052. And that's using the 5 observationally controlled trials. So that's out of 2,800 and a little bit, more than 2,800 people. So that's quite a bit, right? I think that that's great. Then there's controlled trials in the treatment. Okay, so that's just about prophylaxis, controlled trials and prophylaxis. There was 8 studies that did prophylaxis. So it showed reductions in transmission if you were given ivermectin before you ever got sick. Okay, and sorry that I didn't read the heading here. So controlled trials in prophylaxis is 8 studies, the ones that I just talked about. Now we're going to discuss controlled trials in the treatment of COVID-19. There is 19 studies, controlled trials in the treatment. There's 5 random controlled trials with statistically significant impacts in time to recovery or hospital length of stay. And by the way, if you're following along with me, I'm so sorry. I should have told you the page, but the page is number 20 and 21 out of 30. And that PDF file is on my Facebook page underneath where it says Unbreaking Science, the new ivermectin science. I gave a PDF link. So go ahead and find that. If you don't want to find it now, that's fine. Just find it later. But that's where I'm at, is page 20 and 21. So the controlled trials in the treatment of COVID-19, there are 19 studies. In 5 random controlled trials, there were statistically significant impacts from time to recovery and hospital length of stay. Okay, so there was time to recovery or hospital length of stay. They were both reduced. So they didn't have to recover as long, and they didn't have to stay in the hospital as long. As far as one random controlled trial with a near statistically significant decrease in time to recovery, one random controlled trial with a large statistically significant reduction in the rate of deterioration or hospitalization, two random controlled trials with a statistically significant decrease in the viral load, the days of anosmia and cough. Anosmia. Whew, I don't even know what that word means. Okay. Two random controlled trials with statistically significant decrease in the viral load, though, is huge. Okay. And anosmia and cough. Three random controlled trials with large statistically significant reductions in mortality. Okay. This is huge, guys. And that was 700 people. 700 people had a reduction in mortality. Or out of 700 people, there was a significant reduction in mortality. One random controlled trial with a near statistically significant reduction in mortality. Three observationally controlled trials with large statistically significant reductions in mortality. So, guys, we're literally saying to you that you're having potentially, and this is like just statistically significant, meaning like it's making a difference in the random controlled trials and the observational trials, in time to recovery, so length of recovery and hospital stay, in rate of deterioration or hospitalization necessary, decrease in the viral load, and reductions in mortality. I mean, isn't that great? And that is in treating COVID-19. That is even, you know, and they're having success in prophylaxis, and they're having success in treatment. So the next is people are like, is it safe? So here we're going to read this just so everyone we can address everyone's concerns on the safety of ivermectin, okay? Numerous studies report low rates of adverse events, with the majority being mild, transient, and largely attributed to the body's inflammatory response to the death of parasites, which include itching, rash, and swollen lymph nodes, some joint pain, fevers, and headache. So those are actually a response because it's working to get rid of the parasites. So isn't that crazy? So that is, you know, something that's been reported on ivermectin. In a study which combined results from trials including over 50,000 patients, a serious event occurred in less than 1% and largely associated with the administration in Loa Loa. Furthermore, according to the pharmaceutical reference in Lexicomp, which a lot of medical professionals use in the hospitals, we do use it, the only medications contraindicated for use with ivermectin are the concurrent administration of anti-tuberculosis and cholera vaccines, while the anticoagulant warfarin would require dose monitoring. Another special caution is that immunosuppressed or organ transplant patients who are on calcineurin inhibitors, such as tacrolimus or cyclosporin, or immunosuppressant sirolimus should have close monitoring of drug levels when on ivermectin, given that interactions do exist which can affect these levels. A longer list of drug interactions can be found on drugs.com database, with nearly all interactions leading to a possibility of either increased or decreased blood levels of ivermectin. Given studies showing tolerance and lack of adverse effects in human subjects, given escalating high doses of ivermectin, toxicity is unlikely, although a reduced efficacy due to decreased levels may be a concern. So the drugs may interact with each other. It's not necessarily going to cause toxicity, but we might need to give you a little bit more ivermectin, in other words, because if there's a drug interaction, sometimes it can cause lower doses, and so the decreased level might be a concern. So if the drugs do interact. But I even looked, I think it was yesterday, if it interacts with remdesivir or, you know, convalescent plasma or whatever it is. And I looked some things up on drugs.com. They have an interactions checker. And so you can go through and add which drugs, you know, the patient is on and things like that and use that too. Of course, we also have that with Lexicomp in the hospitals. But if you're at home, you know, maybe you do or don't have access to something like that. So I've used drugs.com often, and it's just great for the regular person who wants to check interactions with any medications at all. And I think it's really beneficial to check that out. Concerns of safety in the setting of liver disease are unfounded, given that, to our knowledge, only two cases of liver injury have ever been reported in association with ivermectin, and both cases rapidly resolved without any need for treatment. So there was no need for treatment for that liver issue, and it was with ivermectin. But listen, this has been on the market for 30 years, and so it has a lot more information on it than, let's say, remdesivir, and people are so willing to accept the brand new drugs that we know nothing about, just like they're willing to go and take a brand new vaccine that we know nothing about. I mean, it's 2 months worth of data, and we literally, I heard the doctor saying that they have concerns about these vaccines and the safety of them, but because it was a pandemic and they were like emergency use authorization only for a very short amount of time, that they would be willing to like go ahead and say yes. But if it was a year or a longer period of time, then they would have a lot of serious reservations about the safety profiles of these vaccinations. That is what I heard on the FDA and the ACIP meetings. So that should cause concern just in anybody who's interested, in my opinion. But as long as you're fully informed, like I said, that's really the main thing. Some have described ivermectin as potentially neurotoxic, yet one study was performed, a search of global pharmaceutical database, and found that only 28 cases of serious neurological adverse events such as ataxia, altered consciousness, seizure, or tremor. So in 30 years of using that, they've only seen 28 cases of something like that. So it's a very small amount after being on the market for so long. That's their point. And potential explanations include the effects of concomitantly administered drugs, which increase absorption and pass the blood-brain barrier or polymorphisms in the MDR1 gene. However, the total number of reported cases suggests that such events would be extremely rare. And finally, ivermectin has been used safely in pregnant women, children, and infants. So the discussion on the whole thing is discussing all of what they found. And I'll spare you the details on that since I've kind of already given you the summary. But like I said, if you go to COVID-19criticalcare.com, you will find the prophylaxis protocol and the early outpatient protocol and the MAS Plus protocol. And so if someone is in the hospital and they're, you know, not doing as well, they would be a MAS Plus protocol. And MAS Plus stands for M as in methylprednisolone. That is a glucocorticoid steroid. A is ascorbic acid. That is vitamin C. T is thiamine. It is vitamin B1. And H is heparin. It is sometimes given in a low molecular form as a shot called Lovenox or an oxaparin. And heparin is also a drip called heparin. So it can be given in two different ways. Now, MAS Plus means plus more things. Okay, so methylprednisolone, ascorbic acid, thiamine, and heparin plus, and guess what the next one is? Ivermectin. And it actually says on the protocol that ivermectin should be considered one of the core medications. So it really should be, and it's given day one, day three, and then if necessary, day six and day eight. But sometimes just those first two gets rid of COVID. Literally has happened in patients that I've advocated for. So I'm not diagnosing, treating, or curing anything. I'm just telling you what happened to the people that have tried it that I've seen. And this is just me. Nicole has seen it happen hundreds of times with all these different people. And so, you know, we're just sharing information about what we've seen. If it's worked, it doesn't mean it would work for every single one. I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine that it would work for maybe every single person, but I do think the great majority probably would. And it does have science behind it. So, you know, like Nicole and I usually say, we're not asking you to slather yourself in peanut butter and howl at the moon and align your chakras and like all this weird, crazy stuff, right? We're asking you to take a look at the science here that this, you know, literally, he is a pulmonologist, so he's a lung doctor and a critical care specialist. So he is, and all of these people are the best intensivists, like in the country. Dr. Paul Merrick is known for being one of the top intensivists in the country. He's published almost more than any other intensivist. So it's literally like really great doctors created this protocol. It was not me. It was not Nicole. Like, we're just telling you guys the information from what we found because we really want the people to you know, take control of their health and wellness and to be able to advocate for their loved ones or themselves to be getting what they need. And if you have a doctor who is refusing ivermectin and you would like to try it, I would also recommend you to go to COVID-19criticalcare.com. And if you go there, they have a place where you can click on getting a doctor who will prescribe ivermectin. There's doctors on there who would prescribe hydroxychloroquine, and there's doctors on there who would prescribe ivermectin. So IVM obviously is short for ivermectin. If it says that next to the doctor's name, you know that they can do that. There's doctors who will do multiple states, and you can contact them. There's also doctors per state. So, like, let's say you're in Alabama and you can't really find anyone who does, or like you're in a different state, you can't find anyone who does your state. Go to the one that says multiple states and see if somebody there can help you. And sometimes it does take a day or two or a couple of days to get the medications. So just make sure that you give yourself enough time. Don't wait until you're on your last leg and you have to head into the hospital. Do this as a prophylaxis, or do this early, early on so that you're not waiting until the last moment when you absolutely need it. And we do know that some of these medications are working in all of these phases, right? In prophylaxis. So if you're like, hey, well, I'm not sick, you're like, great, let's keep it that way, and you can get on the list if you want. You know, or if you're just barely sick and you're like, well, it wouldn't hurt to, like, kick it early, right? It wouldn't hurt to just, you know, get it gone. That way you don't worry about getting into a hospital and doing damage to the lungs or different things like that. I mean, highly recommend just getting on this. There also is, part of the IMAX protocol is other vitamins and nutrients that you can get too. And these are all optional, but these are just some things that have been working for people. I personally am taking them, so I can vouch for what I have been taking. I can't vouch for anything else. But as far as the prophylaxis protocol, give me just 1 second. Let me find it so I can read it to you. I know it's in it, but if you go to... Hang on, let me just go to the regular website. I have an easier time finding it there. Okay, so let's go there together if you want. COVID-19criticalcare.com. Okay. So NIH permits ivermectin's use in treating COVID. And then Dr. Corey speaks to millions on the Hugh Hewitt Show. FLCCC review of data on ivermectin is going to be published in days. Awesome. Okay, so you go to their site. And what I just want you to know is the iMask. iMask is going to be the one that's going to be for prophylaxis and early outpatient treatment. It's in the middle of the page, right underneath the donate button. Click on that, and it will give you a prophylaxis and early outpatient treatment for America if you click next to the flag. Okay? Let's see. Okay, so the prophylaxis protocol. Ivermectin is... The prophylaxis protocol is 0.2 milligrams per kilogram per dose, one dose today, second dose in 48 hours, and then one dose every 2 weeks. That is the prophylaxis protocol for ivermectin. It is also to be before exposure. Let's say you've had an exposure, right? Post-exposure, let's say you got exposed to COVID-19, you want to protect yourself. That is also on here. So 0.2 milligrams per kilogram per dose, same thing. One dose today and second dose in 48 hours. So, you know, that's just a, hey, you got exposed, go ahead and give yourself a dose today and one in 48 hours. And then the prophylaxis is every couple of, you do the same thing, one dose today, second dose in 48 hours, and then one dose every 2 weeks, okay? Also in that prophylaxis protocol is vitamin D3, 1,000 to 3,000 IUs per day. Vitamin C is 1,000 milligrams twice per day. Quercetin, which is something that functions very similar to hydroxychloroquine in the fact that it opens the cell to zinc. It also is like quinine. That also is a something that opens the cell to zinc. So Quercetin, it's Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N. You can literally go find it at your Sprouts, your natural grocers, probably Whole Foods, you know, something like that. Quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, and it's on that page. So don't forget, COVID-19criticalcare.com. Click on the iMask Plus protocol. Quercetin, 250 milligrams per day. So I am taking Quercetin. I am taking vitamin D3, I'm taking vitamin C, zinc It says zinc for 50 milligrams per day, and then melatonin 6 milligrams before bedtime. And you want to take that melatonin before bedtime only because it causes drowsiness. So just make sure that you're only taking the melatonin at night right before bed. So that is your prophylaxis protocol for ivermectin, D3, vitamin C, quercetin, zinc, and melatonin. And like I said, I didn't invent this. This is not me telling you what to do. This is these doctors who are specialists. I'm just giving the information to the average person. You know, keep in mind that that it is weight-based. And so, of course, you want to follow the second page has a weight-based chart to dose up the ivermectin. And it tells you exactly how much. They make each tablet in 3-milligram tablets. And so you would round to the nearest half tablet. And so they give you a chart on here. But, of course, if you contact physicians who are willing to prescribe it, like I said, they are on the website as well. Let me find out where to go for that because I'm usually looking at this on my phone. And hang on just 1 second. I usually look at it on my phone, and I just want to make sure I can help you guys find where to find the doctors. Okay, hang on. Physicians. Disclaimer and privacy policy. Medical evidence. Da, 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 da. You can go in there under medical evidence that explains why we use methylprednisolone, ascorbic acid, thiamine. And by the way, the ascorbic acid and the thiamine are literally supposed to be IV, especially if they're in the hospital. So just FYI. And there are ways to get IV vitamin C outpatient. I don't know if you guys know this, but there's vitamin bars. And some of them are like on wheels and they literally come to your own home and they do that, or you can go into their locations. But if you go to Google or DuckDuckGo or something like that and you're checking for IV vitamin bar or IV vitamin rehydration stations, things like that, they sometimes will have, you know, IV vitamin C that you can get if you were sick and you wanted to try to stay outpatient as much as possible. That would be something you can get. I have a hard time getting IV vitamin C in the hospitals and IV vitamin B1. I don't know why. A while back, I know the FDA was trying to remove like 25 supplements or something like that from the market. I don't know if they removed IV vitamin C or something. It's just kind of nuts how difficult it is to get. But hopefully we can work on that over time. I'm not really sure how to get it back, but okay, their contributions to medicine, their story, contact. Let me see if that's under that. Good grief. Hang on. How do I find a doctor? I know they have it on here, y'all. So, they have a way that you can see. Maybe I'll go to physicians. Nope, that's the physicians that did this. Join the alliance, support our work, patients and relatives. Let's see if it's that. Oh my goodness. Okay, I'm so used to seeing it on my phone that I literally can't even find it, but I know it's on here somewhere. If someone finds it, you just let me know where it was because I know it's on here. I know you can find it. I'm so sorry. I should have checked this beforehand so I didn't look like a total moron. But I'm so sorry, but I do know that I have seen a list of these doctors. And if you cannot find it, please reach out to me because I have pictures of these doctors. I literally took photos because I knew, you know, me or my family might need them. Maybe you guys would need them. And so I have the list of them on my phone. What I can't find is why I can't find them on here. The FLCCC Alliance. Global Partners. Well, they have a lot of people. It's awesome. Peru, Mexico, all these doctors that are on here are great. So I'm sure some of these doctors would be willing to do it in the FLCCC Alliance. Under that, they have tons of doctors' names and things like that. I'm sure those are some of the doctors that you could contact. But the problem is they were saying, like, you know, to contact, it even would say what they were willing, if they were willing to prescribe ivermectin or if they, I'm sorry, guys, I can't find it. However, facts on ivermectin, downloads and translations, early outpatient treatment, medicine, ivermectin. Review of emerging evidence. I don't know. I can't find it, but if you go into the FLCCC Alliance, there's tons of names of doctors, and it's probably there. But if you cannot find it, please reach out to me. I don't want to take any more time looking through that. But he also has a video on here. I know that some people are finding out about it being over-the-counter, and you don't even need a prescription for it. I would recommend talking with one of the doctors that will prescribe ivermectin to you, if possible, if you're able to financially wise. I mean, some of these doctors will meet with you in telehealth medicine, like meaning over the phone, and you literally can get medications that are mailed to you even within a fairly short amount of time. It's worth it to get access to these medications now, and I'll tell you why. Because they are in the process of being approved, not just by the NIH, but the FDA. And once the FDA approves it, all of the hospitals are going to be fighting for it. All of the states are going to be fighting for it, and it's not going to be easily to get, easy to get for the, you know, the average Joe like us. And so highly recommend that you take that opportunity to get it now, because it's not going to be easy to get it later. And that's just the truth. It's going to basically fly off the shelves the second that everyone realizes what's going on. So with that being said, I hope that you will not drag your feet. I hope that you will talk with either your doctor or, you know, one of these doctors about getting access to that medication, whether you want it for prophylaxis, stage one or stage two, and all that kind of stuff, because I'm telling you, the hospitals are going to start using it a lot more often, it seems like, because they're using remdesivir and the convalescent plasma, and this has basically just been bumped up to that status, the same status, meaning they're not approving or denying it, that it's effective. It's just saying, like, they're allowing it, I guess, for use, or saying that it's a useful medication or able to be used to treat COVID-19. So once the FDA also is on board and it's really kind of widespread and more known, it's definitely going to be flying off the shelves like hotcakes, kind of like you couldn't get sanitizer for the longest time and Lysol and all these different crazy things. It's going to be like that. So I definitely recommend that you do something about it now. Always easier said than done. I know we're just after Christmas and everyone's kind of tight on money, but it would be worth having some, just even as a prophylaxis, or even just to have, just in case, right? Just as like a little backup on the side. Let me think of anything else that I need to tell y'all about that. So I did go over, you know, the science and making sure I told you guys the most up-to-date information that I can. And that's very important to me because I am in the medical profession, and I just want to make sure that everyone is on the same page, you know. I'm going to reiterate some of the things, though. There's a one-page summary of the clinical trial's evidence. Ivermectin is an antiparasitic medicine whose discovery won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2015. It has proven to be a highly potent antiviral and anti-inflammatory property in the laboratory study. In the past 4 months, numerous controlled clinical trials from multiple centers and countries around the world have been reporting consistently large improvements on COVID-19 patient outcomes when treated with ivermectin. And then you can click the link to see the scientific reviews and things like that. Properties of ivermectin. Ivermectin inhibits the replication of many viruses, including SARS-CoV-2, influenza, and others. Okay? So keep that in mind, y'all. Ivermectin inhibits the replication of many viruses, including SARS-CoV-2, influenza, and other viruses. So keep that in mind. It inhibits the virus, both SARS-CoV-2 and influenza. Could I make that any clearer? Ivermectin has potent anti-inflammatory properties with multiple mechanisms of inhibition. Ivermectin diminishes the viral load and protects against organ damage in animal models. Ivermectin prevents transmission of COVID-19 when taken either pre- or post-exposure. Ivermectin prevents transmission of COVID-19. That is huge. Remember, the vaccine does not even do that. Ivermectin hastens recovery and decreases hospitalization and mortality in patients with COVID-19. Ivermectin leads to far lower case fatality rates in regions with widespread use. So, it says 27 controlled trials, including a total of 6,612 participants, have been completed using well-matched control groups. 16 trials, including over 2,500 patients, are prospective, randomized, and controlled. 11 of the 27 trials have been published in peer-reviewed journals. So don't let anyone tell you that it hasn't been peer-reviewed. That is not true. 11 out of the 27 trials have been published in peer-reviewed journals. 3,900 patients and the remainder are in preprint right now. So they're going to all be peer-reviewed and published soon, that's what he's saying. So the rest of them are coming. And then when it comes, it's all going to come out, and it's literally going to be difficult to find it. So I want to make sure that you guys are aware of all of these things early on so that you can protect yourself and your family, okay? And I know we spent a long time talking about ivermectin and everything and really just boiling down because, listen, you guys, I have seen people crying because they're so fearful of this virus. I have seen people hurting. People are wearing masks everywhere they go. That is taking a psychological toll on children in schools. You know, people have been shutting down their businesses of 50 to 100 years. They are hurting. They've lost their income. There are so many people hurting because of COVID-19. There are people who have been lied to about its severity, which breaks my heart because, yes, people have been dying, and I completely agree that that's not good. But on the other hand, like, the amount of people surviving is so much greater, but that's not what we hear in the media. And so these people are getting this vaccine that doesn't have any long-term studies. It doesn't have enough information, in my personal opinion, to make a determination. However, if that is something that you choose, I don't judge you. I just want to make sure that you're aware. You know, I don't want to be a guinea pig. I don't want my children to be a guinea pig. I would hate for you to be, but that is always your choice, right? And some people want to choose to be the latest in science and to be, you know, trying the latest things, and they know the risks that they're taking. And so, with that being said, I just wanted to encourage you to go to my page and see some of the reactions that have happened and just make sure that that's something that you're okay with if that was you, because we all need to be aware that there's been a lot of severe neurological issues that have happened. There's been deaths that have happened, and we don't always hear those on the media. So I'm not trying to deter you as much as I am trying to inform you, and I hope that you guys will be fully informed and making a decision, whatever's best for you and your family. At the end of the day, I hope that we all can agree that this should remain our choice, that the government has no business forcing that on free people, and that we need to fight back and fight for our, you know, our jobs. We cannot be dependent on these medical tests and these medical procedures and these vaccinations to be forced into doing that in order to keep our jobs. That is wrong. That is not the place of the government. And we need to remain free. And it's only going to happen if we the people push back. So I love you guys, and I hope that you will continue to fight for medical freedom. If you want to wear a mask, wear the mask. If you don't want to wear the mask, you know, be free. And I hope that you guys will all agree that there are people who have medical conditions. There are people with PTSD that have fought in Iraq for our freedom that cannot wear a mask. And so I hope that you guys will love and respect each other in your freedom, in your, you know, your medical issues or just anything like that, you know, and it's not our business to ask. You know, I have some friends of mine who have been raped with their hand over their mouth or a pillow over their face or smothered or something like that. And they just can't. They just can't. It's like PTSD for them. They just can't do it. There's people that I know that have one heart. Sorry, y'all. One kidney, one lung, all those kinds of things. And so, like, it's not our job to go around policing everyone else. Please don't be like Gestapo in Nazi Germany. You know, let's love each other. Let's just love each other and fight for freedom. And if you're sick, stay home, everybody. Like, I get that. If you're sick, stay home. And if you're out there, then, you know, then hopefully you can respect that if you're wearing your mask, then you're protected, right? And you should be, if you're, you know, just like if you go get the vaccine, then you shouldn't be worried about everyone else getting it, because you're protected. And in your mind, if you believe it's effective and it's working, then great. As far as these, you know, surgical masks and these gaiters and these bandanas and everything, you know, they are not protecting against viral particles, because they're, it's like throwing sand through a chain link fence, right? Like, they're going to catch very little. So if you are nervous about that, please wear an N95 mask and make sure that it's fit tested properly, because there's a bunch of N95 masks that don't fit my face right. And I literally had to do like 5 different tests for the hospital system for it to be approved to be an effective mask for me. So if you're nervous and you do feel like it's necessary to wear a mask like that, then I highly recommend doing it the right way, getting the right one and making sure that it fits properly, because that is really the only way that you'll be protected. But even keep in mind that N95s are only 95% as far as filtering out the particle. So it filters out 95% of the particle, but not even 100%. So nothing is 100. Let's try to have faith instead of fear, and let's trust that God has made our immune systems, and that we were actually made to encounter some pathogens will actually create immunity, you know, and create, that's how your immune system is built, is to encounter pathogen and then actually makes it stronger. I tell this story quite often, but I used to get sick all the time before I started in the hospital. And once I started in the hospital a couple years back, I literally have hardly been sick. I mean, knock on wood, but I've literally probably been sick like once, maybe twice for like one day, and not even really sick, just like, you know, kind of take care of myself in the very beginning before it gets worse and one and done, you know? And so I just wanted to let you know that even though my whole family has been sick, every patient that I've treated in the past couple of years has been sick, all through nursing school and everything, and I've been in the hospitals a lot, I literally have like the strongest immune system. So keep in mind that being around, you know, viruses and bacterias and things like that are things that we literally have living inside of our bodies at all times. And they, you know, we just want to keep the homeostasis, and we want to, but part of that is encountering things, and that's how your immune system gets built. So you can't be in a bubble and keep yourself safe at all times, because that's actually not how we were made. And even doing that would actually weaken the immune system if I'm being honest. So just know that God loves you and that he made you just the way he made you, you know, and that you are, you're going to be okay, and hopefully going to a better life if the worst should happen, right? Like, Christians right now, I just want to call you to, like, not a spirit of fear, but a spirit of, you know, like, I mean, what's the worst that could happen? We're going to go to heaven? I mean, I don't want to go there any sooner than I have to, because I love my kids and I love my family. But I also know that I'm going to heaven. Like, it's not going to be the end of the world, right? It's not the end for us. In fact, it's the beginning of the rest of eternity. So I just want to call you guys to, you know, a different kind of spirit. Like, I just want you to keep fighting and have that faith. And I know people will say on their masks, like, faith over fear. And it just cracks me up, because you're just like, that's not where the faith needs to be, in the mask. The faith doesn't need to be in the vaccine. The faith doesn't need to even be in the president at the moment, right? Like, the faith needs to be in God, in Jesus Christ. And I hope that you know him. And I hope that you will have peace, no matter who's president, no matter what bugs come our way, no matter what pandemics or not, or whatever we're going to face. I just hope that you have that faith and trust in him. Anyway, I love you all so much, and I hope that you have a good night. Thank you so much for joining me on Dangerous Freedom. And I'm Lori Jean. You can find our group, United States for Medical Freedom, on all different kinds of platforms. I'm Lori Jean. I believe it's Lori Jean US4MF on Facebook. That's like my little URL, Lori Jean US4MF. And then United States, the number 4MF, is our group. And if you want to look on MeWe, we're United States for Medical Freedom. If you want to look on Parler or Twitter, we're at US, the number 4MF. I hope that you enjoyed the show tonight, and hopefully Nicole can be back with us next week. But I love you guys so much, and I'll talk to you later, okay? Bye-bye.